You're back with Annie on Solidarity Breakfast, and we've got Don Sutherland on the line. G'day, Don. How are you?
Well, I'm pretty good, thanks, Annie. G'day to you and all your listeners. And it's terrific to be able to have a yarn with you again.
Kevin gave a perfect entree into your conversation, which is that Bowen has gone off to COP28, but he's also left some news in our inbox, hasn't he?
He certainly has. And I think that it's just one example that we will focus on today of a whole list of possible starting points for us to delve deeper into what's going on in the economy and how the government is managing all of the environmental and other problems associated with the contradictions and mess that capitalist economies all over the world, not just in Australia, are in right now. We are going to concentrate on what has been happening with the government recently with climate change policy. But I think what I'd like to do today is to frame that within a discussion about the underlying dynamic of the economy, of the society, actually, and that is the profit dynamic. If we do that, we can then understand better what the opportunities may be, but also what the serious problems there are in what the government is taking to COP28 and which it's presenting to us in the general population.
So what you're saying is how they see the world and what they think is a reasonable table setting for dealing with it.
Yes, and the big feature point is, of course, this climate investment scheme. And we'll go into a little bit more about it in a minute. But first, let's just set that framework in place about, you know, what lies beneath the surface, the reality that lies beneath the surface, which if we don't dig into that reality just beneath the surface, then we are ourselves wallowing in a mess of idealism that is not very helpful.
Yep. So what do you see as the realities?
Yeah, profits are the reality, and there are four things that I can talk about. I've been doing a bit of research on them. Some of the things are pretty obvious and have been discussed. The first point, starting point to understand the underlying dynamic is the volume or mass of profits. And over the last 20 years, they've been steadily rising and going gangbusters since about 2016. So in terms of the mass of profit available, there is not a problem.
But of course, with a capitalist system, that doesn't serve because they just, if they make a big profit, they just want more.
Well, the problem with maintaining that profit is, of course, profits are a social relationship. They don't exist on their own. They're only made possible by the expenditure of labour power by the workers and the payment of wages. So they exist in a social relationship with wages. That is, import the class opposites, if you like, and the consequent struggle of business owners and workers. So the next thing we look at is what's going on in that relationship between profits and wages. And the first thing is that over the last, there are two points, quick ones. The first is that over the last 20-odd years, there have only been four occasions when the annual increase in wages has been a bit more, not much, than the annual increase in total profits. And there have been no such occasions like that since 2016. In other words, in every year, the annual increase in profits and wages, profits has always been significantly more, etc. 1 year than wages. The other part of this is what is called the rate of exploitation. That is, the massive profits relative to the total wages paid to enable them to be produced and realised. And what we learn here is also, I've talked about it before on this program, is that over the last 20-odd years, there has been a steady rise in the rate of exploitation of workers. And again, it kicks after a little bit of a dip in around 2014-15. It's gone gangbusters again through to about now. So the rate of exploitation is rising. The mass of profits is rising. You'd think that things would be all well and good for business owners, capitalists, to do productive things with those profits. So we come to the third feature of this dynamic, and that is they haven't. Especially Australian-based capitalists, both those who are Australian citizens and those who are overseas investors and so on, have been bludging with that growing mass of profits. The rate of investment is low. You could say that business has been on strike, or you could say that they have been bludging. So what we see, and I've looked at various ways of how the Australian Bureau of Statistics presents the data, is a steady decline. Well, it's actually worse than steady. It's quite dramatic decline. And again, since about the mid-2010s, it's got worse and worse.
So what you're saying is that even though we've got climate crisis, this plays into the reason for why this capitalist class is just going to continue fiddling while Rome burns by having all the profits from fossil fuels continuing.
That's where we're heading, yes.
Yeah.
And that has very simple... If you understand the profit dynamic beyond just the massive profits and superficial ideas like greed, if you dig deeper and understand the dynamic, then that presents the need for really deep thinking about what is the role of government to rescue the bludgers, or is the role of government to enhance the capacity of working class communities and their unions to increase the rate of democratic transition to renewables? And we'll come back to that in a moment. So the rate of productive investment, if we left to their own device, the employers on their record do not have the capacity to provide of their own free will to enable the rapid transition that is needed. The profits relative to total investment have been declining steadily. Now the question next arises, well, you know, why is that the case? And the reason is that it's not profitable enough. In other words, the return for their investment in capital equipment, the productive equipment that's necessary, and the wages that have to be paid to bring that equipment to life, you put those two things together, the total profit relative to that is falling. And the evidence on that is hard to dig out, but that's what the indicator is.
Goodness me. I just remind listeners that they're on Solidarity Breakfast and we're chatting with Don Sutherland, who's dissecting the slothful and verging on criminal behaviour of our business class.
Is the rate of profit falling? The indicators are that it is, but it's not. We need to do a lot more work on the data that's available from the Australian Bureau of Statistics to be able to confirm that. But there is a logic that that is what tends to happen in capitalist societies of their own accord, no matter how governments are managing the system, whether they're using a Keynesian framework or whether they're using a neoliberal framework, when the two overlap these days anyway, but we won't go into that right now. So just to reinforce...
I mean, it's the basic principle of capitalism, isn't it? They see this as being reasonable behaviour.
Yeah, over a cycle, the rate of profit will at some point tend to fall. And the only answer to that is to increase the rate of exploitation of both people and the environment. That's the only answer that capitalists have to reverse the rate of profit. And enable then some form of investment that will reproduce the system in a way that works for them. So now we come to Bowen's specific proposal. So keep in mind all of that. The signature new, or it's not a new policy, it's actually an increase in the intensity of an existing policy called the Capacity Investment Scheme. And what this scheme does, he's increasing it in an announcement that he made last week, and that's one of the signature policies, one of three or four, that he's taking to COP28. Like all of the others, with the possible exception of the National Reconstruction Fund, they're all directed to solving and helping corporations to invest in transition technology and help them to accept a lower rate of profit for a period of time before they get the rate of profit they want. So the way it works, the way this capacity investment scheme works, is that the government, using income from taxation, underwrites the revenue for projects that are approved on application. So a corporation or some other business makes an application for support under the Capacity Investment Scheme on the basis that they have a projected revenue. And during the years when the revenue is below an agreed floor, the government subsidises that to lift it, thus lifting the profit that is made artificially. And then at some point, when the revenue is above an agreed ceiling, then the company is expected to pay back to the government a portion of the revenue above, a portion. Okay, so that's how it's intended to work. The great assumption is that the corporations and other businesses who will apply and be successful in the scheme won't work out a way to rort it. And one of the things we've been learning about how the energy production and distribution corporations in Australia that supply electricity into the grid, into the public grid, the way they work is based on some quite mischievous approaches to pricing and so on. And you would have to say that their record is that they will work out at some point how to rort this
policy. Because that's how they operate. They see it as being their raison d'etre. But communal good isn't really at the heart of their beat. But it also, what you're talking about is really revealing about the way this government sees itself as a machine, doesn't it? Its ideological framework. It's really quite fascinating.
Yes. Well, I think. I'd use to describe recent Labor parties and and this Labor government, I think the word neoliberalism is quite appropriate.
Yeah, I think so too.
In other words, they reproduce the critical features of neoliberal policies over the years. The religious devotion to markets, the private markets in money, in goods and services, and so on. But they are more intelligent and confident in how they tackle those. They realise that the way in which the profit system works creates contradictions, and so there is a need for government intervention. They realise that if the hot points that emerge from time to time, what's going on with the aged care industry as it is now, is not adequate for the ageing population. So, you know, they intervene to, in some way, fix it up. But it's that weird mixture of public or government support to enable the continuation of private profit-making within the framework. So it's a neoliberal approach. It's more competent, and it has, I suppose, a human face up to a limit. So I think that's the sort of thing we're seeing when it comes to this new policy proposal. It's a good example of how using a deeper understanding of the profit dynamic, we can get to grips with what it really means.
Yeah, it's interesting because it gives quite starkly the ideological difference between their approach and community action approach.
Yes. Now, there's two points there, I think. Firstly, the more serious journalists in all of mainstream media have welcomed this escalation, if you like, this increase in the commitment to this capacity investment scheme, and is generally favourably disposed to the government's approach to managing, to helping private capital deal with climate change on our behalf. What a contradiction in terms that is.
Yeah, that's right.
So the overall mainstream response is supportive. As you say, it leaves begging the question, well, what do we who are active in the Labor Party or the Greens, to the left of the Labor Party and the Greens, active in the smaller socialist parties, how do we tackle this? I think it's absolutely important in the next 3 or 4 months that a genuine socialist platform needs to be developed and synthesised, and it needs to have socialist characteristics, because the whole logic of government financial support in all of its various forms, whether it's a revenue underwriting scheme that is really about the rate of profit, or whether it's a subsidy scheme, or whatever it happens to be, then that says that no public, no support without comfort, without associated extension of public ownership in whatever appropriate form it might be.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating to me. It's fascinating that the institutions really believe that they're more important than humanity.
Yes. We've got to, you see, the weakness in our position is that it's so broken up. There's no synthesis of all of the people who can switch on to this idea and would take it more seriously of constructing.
I see your point, but it's a non-hierarchical approach. Like, it was one of the things that came out of the movement, where they took over the stock exchange. I've forgotten even the name of it. Where they people started to have the police couldn't find people to talk to, the head honchos, because they deliberately didn't have head honchos.
Yes.
I mean, it's a this is actually a conversation being had with the hierarchical institutions of power.
This is another feature of neoliberalism. Everything is done at the level of institutions and power. So I was reading in one place that, Greg Conde, former secretary of the ACTU, and really one of the major Laborist leaders on climate change policy from a government point of view, may well be tapped again to lead a government agency in driving this whole scheme forward.
That's right, he's been put in charge.
You're right, it is institutional. Now, as to what the most important thing that we, to the left of the ALP and the Greens, must do is to develop a program that is based on public ownership and control. That it may be incremental in some ways and more dynamic than incremental in others, but it's a program that says that public ownership must be a part of rapid democratic green transition. And then associated with that, the development, which is more complicated and tricky, is the development of a strategy that is democratic and about building democratic power that can neutralise opposition to the expansion of public ownership. Now, I think we get the clues, and this is where Colin Long at the Victorian Trades Hall Council does such an excellent job with his, I guess, the fortnightly newsletter I get, but it goes out much wider. I mean, obviously to other many, many people, but he produces some really good stuff. I just, by the way, for example, he hit upon and found some really good data about how the energy corporations that generate and supply into and distribute electricity through the grid, what they get up to as an example of the rorting thing. He found that a mob called the Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis showed that the actual profit taken by these corporations was 67% higher than the normal profit.
Surprise, surprise.
Right?
Yeah.
And the reason for that is that they were the mechanism they used to do that was to overestimate the costs of building, operating, and maintaining the network.
Yeah. Now, actually, that's been well known for quite a while. And then when they have the fire seasons and stuff like that, they realise that they haven't done any of the maintenance that they keep saying that they're going to do. But anyway, by the by, we have to finish up. We've come to the end.
What Colin does as well, and this is really important, and I recommend this to readers, is that he is a champion of public ownership and articulates the rationale for it. I think the profit dynamic that I've presented reinforces that. And he points us towards the work of the Trade Unions for Energy Democracy and their new report, Beyond Recovery. It's called Beyond Recovery, the Global Green New Deal and Public Ownership of Energy. And their declaration, Our Future is Public Energy Democracy. And you can find out more of that if you Google it, Trade Unions for Energy Democracy. And we need to, there are little glimmerings in Australia of that type of thing. We need to give it a lot more oomph and momentum.
Thanks very much for talking to us today. You've given us lots to think about, Don.
All the very best to everybody. And we should follow through and look at how that profit dynamic relates to some of that long list of other things, like anything from the annual wage review to the Reserve Bank's contradictory management of interest rates, the cost of living, AI, dare I say, the stage three tax cuts. So if you use that dynamic, you can understand those things in a more profound way than what we than the idealistic approach that is the product of just looking at the surface of things.
Well, we'll have you in for the last live program we have before the Christmas season begins, and we'll have this conversation, I think.
Well, that will be... Look forward to it.
Okay. Talk to you then.
Bye.